It's time for the Picture House Podcast with your hosts, Sam and Simon. Please ensure that your mobile phone is switched off, refrain from smoking, and keep conversation to a minimum. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show!
Simon from cinema chain Picture House, and we'll be playing the film. Very excited to have you back in the big screen.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Because the last few years you've been very busy with television, working on The Nick. Have you been keeping an eye on cinema during that time? Do you still go to the cinema, watch a lot of films?
I've been keeping an eye on it, sort of what's happening, is there a trend that is going to be more than a trend? Is it going to be something that's kind of secular change as opposed to a cyclical change? Talking to people to keep an eye on what's going on in terms of how directors are being treated. You know, up until a few years ago, I was vice president of the Directors Guild of America, and so I was getting a lot of anecdotal information about how directors were being treated, particularly by the studios. Mm. Although sometimes directors in the independent world also find themselves in really difficult circumstances. So I've tried to maintain those contacts and sort of listen to what directors are saying about what's happening in the business. I don't think my movie going changed that much. I don't, because of the work schedule, I haven't been going as much as I would like. Mm-hmm. But I try to keep watching things whenever I can.
You have on your blog, on your website, Extension 765, you do one of my favorite posts of the year is your roundup of the end, you know, what you read, what you watched. I think that's really nice for someone who, you know, people look up to you, they watch your movies, they watch your shows. It's nice to see what people, you know, what you're watching, you know?
Well, I'm still exploring. I'm still looking at stuff. I'm returning to things that I've watched before. I'm trying to watch new things. Reading, which I think is a good thing to do, reading things that have nothing to do with movies, just trying to keep yourself, you know, exposed to a lot of different forms of art. There are obviously things that I don't list that I go to see, museums and or magazines that I'm reading, or, you know, news shows that I'm watching. But you can sometimes, if you look at a year's list of things that I've watched, and then you see what I made the following year, you can kind of reverse engineer that I was doing some homework about either a specific film or a type of film that I ended up making later. You'll see a bit of that this year, I think.
How do you keep track of everything? Have you got a notepad or is it a spreadsheet?
No, I've got a notebook that I use as kind of an all-purpose bin to keep ideas in, or things that I've seen. There's twice, many years ago when I did this show called K Street, which was a tricky show to make just because of the way we decided to make it. And after the 10th episode, I was taking the train back from Washington, D.C., and it was not an experience I think any of us enjoyed too much. It was, like I said, the production schedule was very intense. Being in D.C. wasn't really, I don't think any of us really enjoyed it. I don't think the people there liked having us there. Like, the whole thing just got very dark. And I realized as I was walking back to my apartment in New York after getting off the train that I'd left one of my notebooks in the seat, you know, slot in front of me. And it happened to be a notebook that was almost full. So this had probably 9 months or more of notes, observations, lists of things. We were at the time starting to write and prep Ocean's 12. So there would have been I had in it, at the front in big block letters, if this is found, call this number, cash reward, whatever. And it wasn't even 10 minutes before I was on the phone to Amtrak saying, I lost this notebook, and that's never recovered. Yeah, I mean, obviously what happened, somebody somebody cleaning the train found it and just threw it away.
Which is good.
well, no, way, I mean, yeah. And then that happened again to me in 2010. This time on a plane, coming from New York to Los Angeles. Another notebook gone. Nobody opened the front page to see my cry for help. Oh, and yeah, those are frustrating. And that's why there's a gap, actually, in one of the year. There's like a 6-month gap in one of my postings where there's nothing because it was all in my notebook. I've gotten a little more diligent now about transcribing that stuff into a document on my laptop. But when those things happen, it's really frustrating because I'm such a big believer in writing things down. Mm. Otherwise, they disappear very rarely to return. So I don't know. I'm a couple of pages away from filling up one of my notebooks now. It's starting to fall apart, actually. And I think this will be its last trip, but I'm keeping tight grasp on it.
Absolutely. Check your seat before you leave the plane.
Yeah, it's not going to happen again.
I've started doing a Google Doc spreadsheet because I would go through several notebooks. I wouldn't lose them. I would just sort of forget to bring it one day, and then there'd be a gap. And then my memory is so bad, I would forget. So now it's on my phone, a Google Docs, and I've been doing it since 2015, and it's working out so far.
Yeah, I wish I'd started it sooner. I mean, actually, there was a period when I was 14 where for a few months, I was creating index cards of everything that I was seeing and writing little, you know, like a paragraph. And I did it for a while, and then I stopped. I think it was because I was seeing so much. Mm. I was watching so many films that it became sort of a chore as opposed to a pleasure. And I thought, well, you know, I don't want to be a critic. Why am I, you know, I want to make stuff. I don't want to really write about movies, although occasionally, you know, I've done little pieces. But now I look back and think, oh, I wish I had kept up some version of that, or at least a version of what I'm doing now.
What made me think about watching old films and making notes was the week I watched Logan Lucky in the cinema. I think 2 days later I watched Bullet in the BFI, British Film Institute. And I wondered, it's very specific and I could be way off the mark, but the opening titles in Bullet are very similar to the opening titles in Logan Lucky in the fact the film plays through the letters as it sort of comes on screen.
Right.
I wondered if that was an influence maybe. Or am I reaching?
No, I mean, you know, Pablo Ferro, who did those titles, was a real innovator. And did beautiful sequences for a lot of different films. That's certainly one of his more striking examples of work. So that's something that you know, we're all kind of pulling elements from things that we've seen that we liked and trying to see if we can make them our own. Certainly my motto is to steal as opposed to borrow. Mm-hmm. Like if you're gonna, you know, it's like if it's somebody else's jacket, you know, you just gotta steal it and wear it and pretend it's yours. And you know, if you're somebody like me who I think is more of a synthesist than an originator, you know, those sorts of influences become really crucial, and how you combine them and alter them becomes very important. And sometimes that's a matter of trial and error. Sometimes you'll try an idea out that's sort of a riff on something you've seen, and you realize, oh, that's not really working. Or when I pair it with this other idea that I thought would work, that doesn't fit. And so you have to sort of back up a step and find another idea. But lately, I've been able to at least find a way to combine my influences and my interests in a way that haven't been too problematic. There's I think less of a, you know, when you're working on something, you're constantly filtering. And trying to eliminate the versions of the thing that you feel don't work or are not unified. And so I feel like, and maybe it may be because of the Nick and the fact that it was such an aggressive schedule and we were doing a lot of work in a short period of time, I came out of that, I felt like a little bit different, a little bit better at filtering, a little bit faster at eliminating the bad versions of things. And I feel like Mosaic, which is a piece that hasn't come out yet, but that I shot before Logan Lucky, and Logan Lucky both really benefited from the Nick. That was a real workout.
Must be good, yeah. We're doing something completely different after doing, you know, a serialized television show with sounds like a crazy schedule going into a feature film where you maybe have a bit more room.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I was able to be more aggressive with the schedule on Logan Lucky than I would have been before the Nick. You know, my idea of how quickly we could move changed, you know, by making that show for the better. And now I think the challenge is for me to continue to find what I've realized late in my career, really late, is that genre is a really great vehicle to sort of explore your own preoccupations. You look at a movie like Get Out, for instance, and you know what Jordan Peele did was take, you know, a genre and sort of use it as a vessel to talk about some stuff that he wanted to talk about, and it all worked really well.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, I've become more compelled by that idea than say just doing something that's kind of a straight piece. I think certainly my interest as a filmmaker, not a viewer, in straight drama is sort of diminished a lot. Like, it's hard for me to imagine doing just a kind of straightforward drama now. I'm much more interested in trying to find an oblique angle at coming at something than just sort of saying, oh yeah, we're making a drama about this, you know, historical thing that happened. I'm trying to find a spin, you know, or a hook, you know, to get in so that there's more than one thing going on.
Absolutely. And I think as an audience, that's exciting. I think people going to cinemas want to see, you know, something that's not just the what it is on the cover, you know. They want to be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, could you make a movie about what's happening to people who live in West Virginia now who are under, you know, economic stress? Sure. I think building a heist film around that is more interesting, you know, than just a straight drama about that subject. My feeling, I guess, is that everyone would be better served by you just making a documentary about that than making a dramatic feature. And so what I liked about the Logan Lucky script was there are these things that are kind of leaking in from the sides that are absolutely grounded in reality, but that's you can, as a viewer, give it however much emphasis you want to, because at the end of the day, it is about a group of people trying to pull off a heist.
Absolutely. I think it adds more texture if you're looking for it, but also if you're not into it, then the film still, you know, delivers 100%, which is really great. I think also for people who know that genre, it's got more to it, you know. That's what I really loved. I loved seeing how complex it was. Like, there's so many plates spinning in that film. It must have been so hard, like, I guess during the script process and during the rehearsals and then in the edit, to kind of give everybody equal weighting and to make sure it's balanced.
Yeah, there's a lot of trying out of ideas, and we did, you know, the first edit of the film was a good 15 to 18 minutes longer than what you see. So the thing that we talked about the most that I'm really happy about, is the lack of what is a pretty standard trope in a heist movie, which is the scene where everybody gets together and explains what they're going to do. I didn't, I thought it was great that the movie didn't have that. That basically you kind of understood what the basic approach was, but you sort of learn as you go through the movie how they think they're going to do this. Mm-hmm. And so when the discussion came up of, hey, we don't have the Harold the Explainer scene, do you think we should? I was very much insistent that we not do that. That part of the fun of it was not knowing what was going to happen. Mm. And again, when you're in the edit, especially with this kind of film, you're trying to make sure people are clear on what's happening and where they are. You're trying to make sure, as you said, that the emphasis, whether it's on a character or the sort of press and release of the scenes and the sequences, is sort of feeling balanced. That's something that you judge by screening, mm-hmm. really, whether it's for friends or in our case, you know, we did two sort of standard audience previews, one in Texas and one in Tennessee, to sort of judge pacing and whether the humor was working. Previewing is not a pleasant process, but in this case, pretty necessary. It's especially if you're making something that's, you know, mostly, it was funny, we were trying to make the distinction between fun and funny, mm-hmm. because it's not like a you know, set up gag comedy. It's got humor in it and it's fun. And certainly if you have something that's supposed to play in that space, you got to get it in front of people and see how they're responding. If you're getting crickets back, then you know you've got to make some adjustments. But actually the movie tested pretty well. And the things that we learned were very consistent. After the first preview, the comments that came back were, that's what you're looking for, is there's sort of a consensus, mm-hmm. that this is what we need to focus on. And that was the case here. There were really two things that the audience had questions about, and we went back in and addressed those questions. So I was happy. And the whole experience, because we were on our own, was also really fun.
Must be kind of nice, you know, like you're running it in that sense.
Yeah, look, it's not that I don't want to listen to people. It's just that I want the people that I'm listening to come from a place of support and confidence and not fear. You know, the problem when you're, for instance, well, if you're dealing with either with a studio or potentially, you know, a financier with a gigantic investment, they're worried. And so the reaction to what they're seeing is often coming from a place of, you know, fear. Mm. And that's not a good place to make creative decisions, you know, to be coming from that position. So when you look, I have some friends that I have to take a deep breath before I invite them to see the movie, because I know I'm going to get the full-on critical analysis when it's over. But I also know they're rooting for me, and they're rooting for the film. They want us to win. So it's coming from a place of support. But yeah, there's some friends of mine that are pretty rough.
And how do you process their feedback when that stuff comes through?
Is it you kind of count to 10 and thank them and then go lay down. But that's okay. I mean, sometimes it takes a while to hear it, you know. Sometimes you have to hear it on a couple of occasions from a couple of different people. Look, in one case I had a movie that was finished. Finished, and I had a director friend come and see it, and he basically grabbed me by the lapels and said, "You have to get rid of this score. This score is killing you. Like, you literally need to go back and rescore this movie." And he was right, and I did.
Oh, wow.
And that's what you're looking for, you know. Now, that you you know, the source matters in the sense that this coming from another director who I respect lands differently than the studio going, we hate the score. You know, just the dynamic there, if you're the director is, you know, what are you talking about? Whereas with a friend of mine, I begin to look at that very seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. I think lots of people can relate to that. You know, trusted source makes all the difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's good ideas can come from anywhere. But again, when it's, you do have to, it's as much the intention as it is the source, you know, so.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today. We're thrilled to be playing the film in our cinemas this weekend. Bank holiday weekend feels like the perfect thing to go and watch. It's so much fun and really inventive. And I think it's unlike anything out at the moment. Like, I would wholeheartedly recommend it.
Well, I hope people are in the right mood.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for talking to us today,
Steven. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
You have been listening to the Picture House podcast, a Picture House's production brought to you by Picture House Cinemas. We would like to thank everyone who works at Picture House Cinemas and everyone who has ever attended a screening of a film at a Picture House cinema. Thanks for listening and see you next week.